Ducks fans. Are you ready? You are listening to the Ducks and Pucks podcast with your hosts, Mike Walters and Eddie Jones. This is the number one home for Anaheim Ducks talk and analysis. Here we go.
Welcome to the show. This is your host, Mike Walters, along with my co-host, Eddie Jones. And we have a great show for you this week. We were gone, the final week of the season. When we left you, the Ducks had lost to Vancouver. We overemphasized, or maybe I really overemphasized, that the Ducks needed to beat L.A. They then had to play Colorado. And then, of course, they had three more games after that. And Eddie and I, we talked about the Ducks winning that game against the Kings. We said, hey, they got to win most of their games. And just to get your initial reaction, Eddie, the Ducks, they win all five games. Not only that, they leapfrog San Jose. They get home ice advantage in the first round, which, you know, a month or so ago we didn't think was going to be possible. So what do you think, just initial reaction to this last week as the Ducks have gone on this great five-game winning streak?
Yeah, listen, the credit is there for the Ducks for sure for winning their last five games and beating some very good teams along the way in L.A., Colorado, Minnesota, and even Dallas to some extent as well. So the credit should be there, but a lot of it when you look at it, the Sharks did lose five of their last six games. If they win one of those games, the Ducks aren't in second in the Pacific Division. I know that's easy to say in hindsight and looking at it, but they got a lot of help from the San Jose Sharks to get into that spot, but they did everything they could. I mean, they're in a position where to get in, they just had to pretty much win out, is what really we said on the last show and what pretty much everybody had said at that point before the LA game, is that, you know, the Ducks, to get in a good spot, are going to want to win these remaining five games, and they're able to pull it off. So you got to give them credit for that, but you can't ignore the fact that San Jose played so bad in their last six games.
Yeah, they were choking, right, Eddie? I think that's kind of something that we're used to seeing the Sharks do, you know? Yeah. They kind of have that problem, I guess. But and nonetheless, I mean, this is going to be a tough series, as we'll talk about it, you know, all kidding aside. But you're right. The Ducks did what they had to do. The Sharks didn't do what they had to do. And, you know, it ended up working out for the Ducks. So we'll go over these last couple games very, very quickly. Then Eddie and I are going to get to, you know, some player updates and injury news. Of course, you know, you want to know who's in and who's out for the Ducks and the Sharks. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll also break down the series. Eddie and I will tell you areas we think that either the Ducks or the Sharks are better in, give our prediction. And then Eddie will also talk to Ian from Teal Town USA on their podcast. They had a little interview that that we're going to throw up on ours, and we'll finish with that and get you going. So real quickly, the last week of games, the big, big game, of course, was the Ducks against the Kings. And, you know, this one, it didn't start out the way we wanted it. You know, Drew Doughty scored a goal. He got in there and they screened Gibson. The Ducks did respond. Richie got a goal late in the second period. And like the theme, I guess, of this week, Eddie, with a lot of these games is going to overtime. And even in the last month or so is, you know, overtime games. And the Ducks pull this one out. You thought it was going to go to a shootout. Ricard Raquel scores with just 19 seconds left in the overtime. And, you know, at this point of the season with the week to go, some people were upset. They were like, oh, the Kings got a point. But as we knew here, and it played out in the end, you know, the Ducks getting those 2 points was really the big thing, Eddie, because obviously they edged out the Kings at the end of the season as well.
Yeah, it was a huge game, and at the time it was tagged as the biggest game of the regular season for the Ducks, with good reason. And they played a solid game. I mean, even on Drew Doughty's goal, the only reason really he had so much space is Cogliano and Kessler ran into each other at the blue line. And he was, it kind of caused a lot of chaos. He was able to just walk right in and snipe a top corner. Not much John Gibson could do on that play. Then Nick Ritchie picks up his ninth. And then, of course, like you said, Ricard Raquel with the OT winner. And that was the trend. Like you said, OT and getting some crucial wins in OT, something they had struggled with, not just this season, but pretty much since the inception of 3-on-3 overtime. It's been a thorn in the side for the Ducks. The thing that surprised me the most, I think, in this game was that there was 2 penalty minutes total. And it was one yes. power play for the Ducks, and that was it. I mean, this was one of the most tightly called games I had seen all year, especially between the Ducks and the Kings. These are usually games you expect to be high up in the penalty minutes, some fights here and there, a lot of feistiness. But both teams knew how important these 2 points were, and I think that showed in that category.
Yeah, you're right. This game definitely had a different flow to it. You remember, I can't remember which one it was, but when the Ducks and Kings had played earlier in the season, in the first like 5 minutes of the game. So you thought something was going to maybe happen in this one, but no, there wasn't. I mean, obviously the normal hooking and pushing and shoving and trash talking, all that other stuff that, you know, you see anyways. But like you said, only one power play the whole game, you know, a delay of game penalty. They didn't call anything else. Really, you know, tight game. The shots are pretty even. The Ducks held the edge just by four. The big thing was really the faceoff circle, which, you know, the Ducks dominated. They won 62% in this game, and I think that was huge. The Ducks and Kings were pretty even on the, you know, the giveaways and whatnot, but I thought the Ducks played a pretty good game. You know, outside the opening, you know, 5-6 minutes after that, I felt like the Ducks, you know, it was pretty evenly matched, and I thought they had good opportunities. And you know, when you win the faceoffs, Eddie, as you know, the puck possession is usually a lot better for your team, and you get a lot better chances on the forecheck. And we saw that carry over also in the Colorado game, as the Ducks, you know, they won the faceoffs on that one 62%. And again, this was now the next biggest game, of course. I mean, every night was the biggest game of the year, it seemed like, because we went down to the final day of the season. But the Ducks pulled out this one, Eddie, against Colorado, who, you know, they ended up making the playoffs as well. It took them the final day to figure out they were in. This game was a little not quite as good. The Ducks got down, you know, 3-1 going through the second period, but they were able to rally in the third, which we have seen some of that lately. We saw it against Edmonton recently, too. And this time, Eddie, it's Kase with the overtime winner in this game. So the Ducks go to overtime. They get another 2 points. Again, some people are like, oh, Colorado got a point. But as we found out that you know, it didn't matter that they got that point. They barely squeaked in. And the Ducks, again, this game not quite as good of a game against the Kings, but they did what they had to do to get the 2 points.
Yeah, it was definitely a weird game because the Ducks actually played pretty well in the first and second period. They outshot Colorado in both periods, and especially in the second period, they outshot them 15-8. But it was Colorado who came out of that period with 2 goals, both by Tyson Yost. The first one was on the power play, and it was a little bit unlucky that it ends up going in on Ryan Miller, I believe, at that time because he started the second period for the Ducks. And then the second one was a shot that I don't think anybody would have stopped, no matter if it was Miller or Gibson in net. But then you go into the third, and the Ducks got outshot 12-9, but they kind of flipped the script. They grabbed 2 goals, and then Andre Kasha grabs the OT winner off of just a beautiful move to win it in overtime. And yeah, that's the trend we were talking about, the really showing up when it matters for these big games. They realized they were down. It's always tough losing your starting goaltender in the middle of the game and having another goaltender come in. And Miller, of course, lets in 2 goals. And that kind of deflates the tires a bit, but then you've just got the wherewithal to come back and get back into this game. You know how important these 2 points are in the standings, especially at the time Colorado and the Ducks were fighting for one of those wild card spots, because the Ducks hadn't really made that push yet into the third or second spot in the Pacific. So another huge win, another 2 big points, and I just love seeing that fight from them in the third period.
Yeah, I mean, it was good. It was a great game. Like you said, they ended up coming back and winning. You know, they played better in the third period, you know, like flipped the script, like you said. The only real bad news in this, Eddie, was, you know, Gibson and Fowler getting hurt, which, obviously they ended up not playing the next 3 games. That was kind of the damper. It was like, oh, the Ducks won. That, you know, they got the 2 points, but then they had this, you know, 2 big injuries, really. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But as we wrap up these games, you know, Miller had to go the rest of the way. Fowler out. Some of the younger kids had to step up. Like we said, another important win. And then the Ducks played another playoff team. They had to play Minnesota next. And this game was really like the Kings game. It was really a tight game. There were a little bit more penalties called, but it was, another playoff-type game. Same thing like in the King game, and this one Minnesota scored first, and then Nick Ritchie came back and scored, and he out for the first 2 periods, and then they took over in the third, some late goals, but you know, it could have gone to overtime too again, Eddie, like the other 2 games, but the Ducks pulled this one out with a 3-1 win.
Yeah, and it was pure domination in the third period from the outshot Minnesota 11-4. It took them a while, but they were able to get the 2 goals in the end with Andre Kasha getting a big game winner in this one, coming off the big game winner in overtime against Colorado, and it got him his 20th of the season, which is still insane to actually even read that and see that he was able to get 20 goals this year. and Cogliano was able to ice it, and he's been playing pretty well lately heading into the playoffs. But just another character win. You realize you're going into the second period, you're tied at one, and I believe this was the game where the Ducks, I think, knew at the start of the third that Chicago had come back and beat St. Louis with 9 seconds left, so if they got the win, they would clinch a playoff spot, and they really played like they knew that in the third period, like I said, and outshooting Minnesota and just really dominating that that final frame of the game.
Yeah, and that was kind of a thing. Third periods is where the Ducks rallied. You know, they rallied against Colorado, they rallied against Minnesota, and just big. You know, they kept winning these games. They're pretty much all tight games. None of these games were really a blowout. I mean, the last game we'll talk about it. You know, the Ducks did blow out Arizona, but it wasn't really a blowout, but we'll get to that one in a minute. But these games were all pretty tight. The Ducks kept fighting it out. Minnesota was already in, but they were trying to improve their position, and the Ducks were able to do it without Fowler, without Gibson. And then they went and had another game against Dallas, which kind of weird, Eddie, because when we talked about this game last podcast, we were like, oh, this is gonna be a big game, Dallas is in it and they've been fighting it out. But this game was a little bit, I guess, different than the other ones. The Ducks actually came out really strong in this game. They scored the first two goals and actually took a 3-1 first period, and eventually a 4-1 lead. Dallas did fight back and get it to 4-3, but the Ducks ended up winning 5-3 in this one. But I think the big story out of this one is the Ducks got a good start, which always getting good starts, but we want to hopefully see that in this series against the Sharks. But I think what was interesting about this game too, Eddie, is that Dallas was in it, and they ended up barely missing the playoffs, and really that 8-game losing streak killed them, because before we thought, maybe that they would be ahead of the Ducks, and it was just kind of weird in this game to see it be a meaningless game for the Stars, but they still fought it out, and the Ducks were able to prevail.
Yeah, it's one of the worst collapses I think I've seen in the final month of the season in a long time. I mean, they were a team that everybody thought was going to make it. For every podcast leading up until pretty much this one and maybe the last one, I don't even know if Dallas, I think Dallas might even still been in the race the last podcast that we had done. So it's just crazy to think that they ended up missing out because of how bad they played in that month. But they didn't play like it in this game, and they had played San Jose a couple nights before, and they were down 2-0 late in the second period. Ben had got a goal for them to bring it to 2-1, and then the Stars had scored 3 straight goals and ended up winning that game, and they almost pulled it off again in this one. You had Radek Faxa, who scored a goal at midway point through the second period. Jamie Benn scores an early third period goal, and Dallas was really controlling most of that that third period in this game. And if it wasn't for Andrew Cogliano getting that fifth goal for the Ducks, this could have been a very different scoreline, because Dallas was pushing and they were making an effort despite being a team that has no reason right now in that locker room to push and try and win games, just because of how disappointing it was for them to fall from grace and miss out on the playoffs. But a good effort, but again, a good effort from the Ducks to hold on.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll talk about some of these players too that are going to have to step up. And obviously, we saw Silverberg score in this one. Raquel's been leading the way, and we'll talk about some of that as we compare the series. But to see all these players start to chip in has been a big reason why the Ducks have been doing well down the stretch. And they went into the last game against Arizona, and the same thing. You saw Raquel score again. Leading the way with the Ducks, 34 goals, just crazy this season, doing awesome. As we had talked about, Kasha earlier had 20, doing great as well. Scored in this one too. I mean, the Ducks just getting scoring everywhere. And this game against Arizona probably wasn't the best one out of the five, I would think, Eddie. But I mean, the Ducks got it done. They shut down the Coyotes. They did get outshot, but they did win this one 3-0. It was kind of, I don't know, it wasn't as exciting, I guess you would say, as some of the other games. But, the Ducks did what they had to do. They shut out Arizona in the final game of the season. And it was weird because, when we were all watching this game at this point, you knew that the Sharks and the Kings were playing. Everything was still up in air. But those two games had started later, so you didn't know what was going to happen. You just knew that we could win and the Ducks would be in third. And then, of course, Eddie had that crazy chart that he put together with all those outcomes. I think you scrambled like math, like me. I was like, what are you doing? I remember asking you, I'm like, what did you just do? Like, what is that? So you came up with this, the whole scenario of, who would the Ducks play? The Kings, Vegas, the Sharks, because we knew it was going to be one of those three teams. But needless to say, the Ducks got it done. Like you said, they got some help from San Jose. They got some help from the Kings as well, and they pull off second place, you know, on the final day of the season.
Yeah, it was crazy because there was 27 different outcomes that we'd come up with for the possible outcomes from the final games. Most of them involved the Ducks playing the Sharks. With the Sharks getting home ice advantage, I think it was 17 of the 27. The rest, except for one, were Vegas. With Vegas obviously getting home ice, the Ducks would have been falling to the wild card spot. And the last one was playing the Kings in the first round with the Ducks getting home ice advantage. So it was a crazy, crazy ride. And the Ducks only had 3 out of 27, so 1/9 of a chance of getting home ice advantage in the first round, but they were able to pull it off. I mean, they did what they had to do in these last 5 games, and especially in this one. They got the win. It wasn't pretty, but they got the 2 points. And then they just waited to see what happened. And I think at the end of this game, you know, we'd looked at the other scores, and Dallas was up 4-0 on LA. Jamie Benn had a natural hat trick in the first period, and you're like, oh, that one's pretty much over. Minnesota had gone up 2-0 early. San Jose had tied it, and it was, I think, 2-2 at the end of that game. You're like, oh, boy. Well, I mean, at least the Ducks have gotten in a secured third. It'll be interesting to see what Minnesota can do in the final 2 periods of this game. And they just blew San Jose out and ended up winning 6-3. And it was great. I mean, the grind that the Ducks have had to get into this second spot in the Pacific Division has been unbelievable with the adversity that they faced all season, with the injuries early on, with, you know, Ryan Getzlaf not coming back until like early December. Ryan Kesler didn't come back until after Christmas. And just the injuries dotted throughout. And it's just crazy that they were able to actually make this push, win the final 5 games of the season, and end up getting home ice advantage in at least the first round.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what happened, you know, this last month or so, and we talked about some of the other shows. You know, we weren't sure if they were going to make it at that point. You and I still thought that they would, but it was still – there was a question mark. You know, they were fighting it out. They were kind of like, okay, first wild card, second wild card. You know, some nights they changed position like 3 times depending on who was playing who and everything. And I think it was just amazing because once it got towards this final week, it looked like they were going to make it. But then to make it and come into second place despite all these injuries in the beginning of the season, of course, there's some more now. We'll get to those right now. But, you know, just an amazing stretch for the Ducks to go through all that, come out in second, have home ice advantage. And we'll break down the series in a minute. But, you know, we have some of the updates, too, with some of the practices that happened the last couple days and the injuries. So there's some good news. There's some bad news. I guess the big one, Eddie, that really affects this series when we talk about comparing the two teams is John Gibson. I think the big thing, Eddie, is that he's you know, been on ice and practicing the next 2 days, and it looks like he's going to be available for Game 1.
Yeah, that's the big thing, and that's not anything against Ryan Miller. I think Ryan Miller can come in and win you a couple games, but if the Ducks are really looking to make a long run and push for a Stanley Cup this year, John Gibson is going to have to be healthy through the entire playoffs. I mean, he's been a Vezina-caliber goaltender for the entire season. His consistency, I think, is what's impressed me. He's been good all year. It's not like he just really turned it on and was bad before that. I mean, he did have a great, I think it was since January, where he had just phenomenal numbers of goals against average under 2, a save percentage over .93. He was just on fire, but he's been pretty much doing that all year when he's been in between the pipes for the Ducks. So it'll be important to have him in Game 1. The fact that he played a full practice is a good sign. I think they're going to try and push him back no matter what. The only thing that scared me at the time is it's one of those injuries where, you know, it's the upper body injury. Landis Cog caught a piece of his head. It's day-to-day, and those are like all the negative signs that you usually see before a concussion gets announced. And obviously we haven't really heard anything on the extent of his injury, but that was the thing that worried me. So the good news, like you said, is that it looks like he'll be ready for Game 1, and the Ducks have nothing to worry about on that front.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we get to the series, we'll talk about that because that's one of the big advantages that we feel that Anaheim has. Now, some of the bad... you know, Cam Fowler is out 2 to 6 weeks with the shoulder injury was mentioned. And we kind of talked about this before. Eddie and I were thinking, you know, that Fowler could be pushed back sooner. Maybe, you know, that the injury is only labeled as 2 weeks because of the playoffs. So, I don't think we'll see him in this series. But if the Ducks are able to advance, Eddie, maybe he pushes and gets back for round 2.
Yeah, I don't think Cam Fowler makes an appearance this series unless they really feel like they have to push him back if they're down, you know, 3-0, 3-1, or they feel like that he may be close to coming back in a game 6 or game 7 and they need his presence back there. Other than that, I just don't see it. I feel like the 2-6 was generous. I mean, they put the 2 in there just to hope that he could be back for game 1 of the first series if they were to make it at the time when he was injured. So I think that's what it was, but it seems more like a 4 to 6 week thing. Let him rest out the first round. Just hope you can rely on the guys like Boschman and Pettersson, Bieksa, who seems to be back in the lineup for game 1. If they can pick up the slack when Cam Fowler's out of the lineup, it's a tall order for sure for these guys, especially a young guy like Pettersson and a couple of the veterans in Boschman and Bieksa, to really pick up what Cam Fowler has left out with his injury. So we'll see. I think to me that's the biggest loss, because we all kind of assumed John Gibson would be ready to go. It's always been day to day for him. We knew right from the beginning pretty much that Fowler was going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, and he logs the most minutes of any defenseman on that blue line, so it's always a tough task to fill those shoes.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to talk about how that affects the series, too, as far as on the defense. Before we get to that, one last little update, too, is on Patrick Eves. As you know, he's not going to be available. It sounds like there's a couple issues going on that we had heard. It's that his right foot was still not 100%. If you remember, he kind of had aggravated that earlier in the season. And the other issue is his conditioning. I guess they decided to shut him down because he couldn't get his conditioning to where it needed to be to, you know, play a full 60-minute game. So it's unfortunate. You know, he was trying hard. There was, you know, obviously the footage of him trying to get back to full status, but it's not going to happen. So Ducks are going to have to, you know, go without him and see how he does over the summer and comes back, you know, hopefully next season. So with that, we'll get to the breakdown of the series. Real quick, before we do that, you know, we have a Patreon website, patreon.com/ducksandpucks. If you like the articles and the show that Eddie and I do, also we have the postgame show as well. You know, you can go on there and support us. You'll get some free stuff that we'll give out to you. We'll do some shout outs on the show. And if you have a business, we can advertise for you too. So there's a whole lot of good stuff on there. So check it out, patreon.com/ducksandpucks. Okay, let's get to the series now, Eddie, and let's break it down for everybody. You know, give our predictions, what we think about who's going to do, you know, better in certain areas. So I guess just a real quick look at the regular season. Oh, we talked about this. We don't put a lot of weight on it, but San Jose won 3 of the 4 games. But 3 of these games did go, you know, into extra sessions. So if you look at that, you know, you can take it with a grain of salt or however you want to look at it. But those games were also way earlier in the season for the most part, too. So I don't look at the season series so much. Plus, a little bit of is change is obviously you all painstakingly knew the Ducks didn't have a lot of their players in the beginning. So it's a little bit different now. So, you know, there's the regular season. You know, I don't put a lot of weight on it. The thing I do really think that's important to look at in the regular season, Eddie, is their records. And I think for the Ducks, getting the home ice is extremely huge. Not counting the overtime games, because the overtime regular season games are not the same as the playoffs. Obviously, you don't have 3-on-3. You don't have shootouts. But if you look at just their regulation games at home, the Ducks are plus 16 in wins and plus 3 on the road. So that's what I think is key in this. It's not necessarily their record against each other, but I think the fact that the Ducks have the home ice advantage could be huge, especially if this goes 7 games, Eddie.
Yeah, that was huge for them to pick that up, because I think that sways the tide a little bit in their favor. And it's kind of why, from what I've seen from different analysts around the National Hockey League and in the media, that they're giving the Ducks a slight edge right now because of that home ice advantage and the fact that, you know, everybody's seen what this team can do at 100% healthy. And I think that's why not including, or at least not putting too much weight on the season series makes sense with this matchup, because the Ducks haven't really been fully healthy until after Christmas, and they've been a completely different team after that. But you still got to put some weight behind it. I mean, the Sharks have played the Ducks well this year. They've all been close games except for one where the Sharks blew them out. So it's going to be an interesting matchup. I feel like no matter what, it's going to be a tight series, probably a 6 or 7 game one, but that's where that home ice advantage comes in handy, because you've got the chance to start off well and gain some momentum having the first 2 games at home. And then if it gets to it, you've got that last game, the game 7 at home as well, which is definitely a huge advantage. So it's great to have that one up on the Sharks to start the series.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So the Ducks, you know, if they can come out and win those first two games at home, which are huge, you know, we did post the schedule. If you didn't hear, game one and two will be Thursday and Saturday. I will definitely be at both of those games. Thankfully, my work schedule allows me to make it. So I will be at those. And real quick, we will have a watch party for game four at El Ranchito in Orange, like we have done before in the past. And if you show up, kind of a theme, I guess, of the show, too, is everybody gets a free gift for coming to that. And we'll talk a little bit more about some other free stuff that we're doing a little bit later in the show. But anyways, that's kind of the schedule. Like we said, it gives a little bit of an edge to the Ducks as far as the home ice. So talking about the offense now of the two teams, Eddie, we look at the stats here. The Ducks averaged 2.82 goals per season. They were plus 19. The Sharks were just over 3.01 and plus 23. So looking at these two offensively, you know, I like what the Ducks have done recently, and they've been getting some more balanced scoring and whatnot. We all know about the consistency and everything, but what do you think as far as the offense? Do you think the edge still goes to the Ducks on this, or do you think the Sharks, who've been kind of a little bit more consistent throughout the season?
Yeah, I mean it's very, very close, I think. I mean, if you look at the top line, the way it's been working for the Ducks, it's obviously Rakell, Getzlaf, and Perry. And then you've got for the Sharks, it's Pavelski, Evander Kane, and Jonas Donskoy. And I think those are pretty close. I give the slight edge to the Ducks just because of what Getzlaf and Rakell have been able to do this season. But it's the slightest of edges because Pavelski and Evander Kane are just as dangerous. And Jonas Donskoy can step up on occasion and hurt some teams. He can have some very good games. If you look at the second line, and this is where I think things start to drift a bit, you've got Kessler, Cogliano, and Silfverberg for the Ducks. And then you've got Kucher, Thomas Hurdle, and Mikhail Bodker. You know, normally I would say it's pretty close. I just think that that inconsistency that second line has had all year, and a lot of it is due to Ryan Kessler's hip injury and him not being at 100%. So I give the slight edge on that second pairing to San Jose just because you know what you're going to get from them. I mean, Logan Couture is a 60-point, 30-goal guy this year, the only 30-goal guy on the Sharks. That's going to be a deadly line to match up against. And you would expect probably Kessler's line to get the matchup with the Pavelski line. So then you've got Getzlaf going up against Kucher, which is going to be probably the marquee matchup of this series. And then you look at the third line, and this is where they get a little bit interesting because I feel like they both kind of provide that same type of potential. And it's almost an energy line for both teams where you've got Richie, Henrik, and Kasha for the Ducks, and you've got Timo Meier, Kevin LeBanc, and Chris Tierney for the Sharks. I feel like it's pretty even on this one. I mean, that line for the Sharks has an average age of 22. It's a lot of young guys on that line, but then you've also got Andre Kasha and Nick Ritchie around the same age, and you've got that little bit, I guess, of a veteran presence in Adam Henrique up the middle and in how well he's been doing since coming over to Anaheim. So for the top nine, I think it's pretty close. I would give a slight edge to San Jose for just the consistency that they've had with those lines since putting them together. But if the Ducks can get things going, if Kessler and Silfverberg, Cogliano can play the way that we've seen them play at times, and if Henrik, Cash, and Richie can play that way, then I think it could sway in Anaheim's favor. The difference for me, and the big difference, comes on the fourth line. And of course, they're not going to play that much where it's going to make a difference. But when you look at the spare parts that the Ducks and the Sharks have, the Ducks have Chimera, Kelly, Grant, Vermette, JT Brown, and maybe Troy Terry, which is obviously a lot better than the names previously mentioned. The Sharks, on the other hand, they've got Yannick Hansen, they've got Barkley Goodrow, Joel Ward, Marcus Sorensen, Eric Fehr, and Melker Karlsson. That, in my opinion, is a lot better in depth forwards that you guys can, that they can bring in. I mean, Melker Karlsson's a guy who can really put the platoon on any line and make a difference. Yannick Hansen and Joel Ward are definitely third line forwards, in my opinion. So I feel like their fourth line is almost a 3B, and that could create some matchup issues for the Ducks, even though they're not going to play that much. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. In a whole on offense, I give a slight edge to the Sharks. But if Kessler and Henrik's lines can get hot, then that edge is very, very small.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the Ducks' top line, obviously, Perry, Rakell, and Getzlaf, you know, if they keep doing what they're doing, that's going to be good. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, too, in one of our fan questions at the very, very end. But I agree with you. I really think it comes down to the Kessler line and the Henrik line. If those guys, those six, can get things going, they can also obviously slow down the Sharks as well in the Kessler line. It's going to be huge. And you're right. I mean, that fourth line could be a factor. Maybe late in the game, playing those, you know, players more. I mean, we'll have to see, because obviously, you know, the Ducks didn't go out and get some all-stars at the trade deadline. So, you know, our fourth line is what it is. Not going to beat that to a dead horse. But I agree with you there. I give a slight edge to San Jose, but it's real small, especially if the Ducks top nine can play the way that they have in these last, you know, five, six games. Switching gears to the defense now, looking on the season, the Ducks have been better. They gave up 2.55 goals against per game, and the Sharks gave up 2.76. So you've got the Sharks, you know, scoring a little bit more, but giving up a little bit more. So this one's kind of tough for me, Eddie. I still give the edge to the Ducks on this one, but I think part of the issue is obviously having Fowler gone, and then it looks like Bieksa is going to be available, which I know some of you out there have mixed feelings. Some of you, you know, don't really care too much about him, and some of you do. Some of you have pointed out what we've talked about is he does play better in the playoffs. So this one, I give a slight edge to the Ducks, Eddie, but I do think one of the issues is going to be the third pairing for Anaheim, and that's going to be key, because if the third pairing, you know, the top four is going to be fine even without Fowler, but if that third pairing sloughs off, depending on whoever is going to be in it, whether it's Bieksa, Boschman, whoever, that could make, you know, a little bit of a problem there and give a little bit more of an edge to San Jose.
Yeah, I think if Fowler's in the lineup, it's easier to say that the Ducks have a bigger edge on the defensive side of the game. I mean, they finished third in goals against average, but a lot of that has to do with the goaltending that they had this season. Sharks finished 10th, which is pretty good considering the goaltending struggles they did have with Jones and Dell struggling at times. So it's interesting because, I mean, you know, San Jose has that star power. They've got Brent Burns. That helps a lot when you're, you know, and it kind of sways opinions a bit, I think, too, when you're looking at defense and how they match up. In his partner, you've got Paul Martin, a guy who hasn't really played in the NHL that much this season. Joachim Ryan is hurt for them, and is really why Paul Martin is filling in on that spot. So I think that brings down that pairing a bit. But whenever you have Brent Burns out there, it's going to make it dangerous. Of course, the Ducks' best pairing is Lindholm and Manson, and that's going to be one that's relied upon heavily to stifle a deadly Sharks offense. So I think those two match up pretty well. I'd give a slight edge to the Ducks just because you know what you've got with Lindholm and you know what you got with Manson. But with Paul Martin, I think it makes that pairing, even though Brent Burns is clearly the best defenseman in this series, I feel like having Paul Martin is a little bit of suspect on that line. Looking at the second pairing, you've got François Beauchemin and Brandon Montour, and you've got Marc-Edouard Vlasic and Justin Braun. In this case, I'd give maybe a slight edge to the Sharks because I think, again, you know what you've got with Vlasic, and I feel like Justin Braun's serviceable enough to make that pairing okay. Beauchemin and Montour just scare me because we know together, they've been together a lot this season, and at most of the time it hasn't looked that great. Lately, with Fowler going down from injury, they've looked okay. Boschman's kind of changed up the way, at least from what I've seen lately, and how he kind of supports Brandon Montour. He doesn't really jump up in the rush that much. Not that he does a lot anyway, but he's really covering well for Brandon Montour, which has allowed Montour to do what he can do. So that one's close for me. And then again, it comes down to this bottom pairing because the Sharks have Brendan Dillon and Dylan DeMello on that bottom pairing. And the Ducks could go with anything of Pedersen, Walensky, Kevin Bieksa, Holzer if they want. But in my opinion, I think it's probably going to be Marcus Pedersen and Kevin Bieksa. And that's tough. I feel like Pedersen adds that upside where, you know, maybe he can provide a little bit more than you're expecting from him. You know what you're going to get from Kevin Bieksa, but I feel like it's still a better option than having both kids out there in Pedersen and Walensky. But I still have to give the slight edge to Anaheim. I just feel like the depth that they have on that blue line is going to really help them. And once Fowler comes back, it turns from a slight edge, in my opinion, to a big advantage for the Ducks if you have those two top four pairings together.
Yeah, and I would look for those two top pairings to log some ice time for sure in these games, especially depending on the situation as the games unfold in the third period, which, you know, the Ducks may have to do that, you know, given the third pairing situation since Fowler's out. So look for that. I do think, you know, you talked about Brent Burns. I think where he gives, you know, San Jose a good advantage, and we'll talk about it now, is the special teams play. You look at the Ducks on the power play, they're 17.8%. The Sharks are pretty good at 20.6. You know, you got Burns back there blasting those slap shots, doing what he does on the power play. So I think that's where the Sharks are going to have a pretty good advantage advantage. The other part that's in there, of course, is the penalty kill. The Ducks are 83.2% on the season. The Sharks are 84.8%. Obviously, the Ducks played a lot better on the penalty kill in this last, you know, week or two. So, you know, looking at this, you know, part of it really, I think, comes down to the way that the Ducks play their game. We've seen it where they've, you know, lacked discipline. And they've gotten into penalty trouble. You know, we kind of saw that in the Arizona game at the final game of the season. But then we've seen other games where they played, you know, with good discipline, like the game against the Kings. So I give a slight edge to the Sharks based upon the numbers and everything. Of course, also Fowler being out as well affects some of this too. But if it's going to change or if it's going to, you know, help the Ducks in any way, I think the biggest thing that they can do, Eddie, is they can control, you know, the way that they play. And obviously, you and I know this, and we've talked about this on the show for the last bazillion years now, is that in certain games we feel like the refs are against the Ducks, but they're just going to have to play their game. They're going to have to work on the forecheck, you know, work on shutting down, obviously, whichever line for sure that Kessler's going to go against. Work on that, play their 5-on-5 game, and not necessarily worry about the penalties, because if they do that and they get in trouble and they let the Sharks get a lot of power play opportunities, then, you know, we could see that the Ducks might be in trouble in some of these games.
Yeah, I think the only thing you got to worry about is the Ducks playing their game usually leads to a lot of penalties for them. the way they play and the physical style that they kind of deal out on a daily basis, it really leads to their undisciplined style, and that could be an issue for them. And I know some of the penalties they take are dumb, and especially Nick Ritchie's a guy who gets a lot of heat for some of the dumb penalties that he takes. You really can't give the Sharks any chances on their power play because they have guys who can hurt you. I mean, of course, Brent Burns is going to be the centerpiece there, and then you've got Pavelski and Couture. Joe Thornton's out of the lineup. I mean, if he was in, you definitely wouldn't want to give them any opportunities, because that first unit would be that much more deadly. But you add Evander Kane to the mix as well, and yes, it's the 16th ranked power play, but I feel like with the guys they have out there, it's definitely a lot scarier. For the Ducks, I feel like they have the personnel, and I think we've always felt like this. I mean, this team's a couple years removed from having the best power play in the National Hockey League, including the best penalty kill. And I feel like they just lack a designated trigger man on the power play. It's a lot of passing. It's a lot of looking for the perfect pass on most occasions. And then when they finally get the shot off, it's usually either labeled right for the goaltender's chest or there's no screen in front to really block him from seeing it. So I think that's the issue for them. It's more of a systems thing for me, I think, for the Ducks' power play. So on the power play, I'd give the edge to San Jose. And on the penalty kill, I think I got to give the edge to San Jose as well. I mean, they are ranked better, second at 84.8, like you said. Ducks are fifth at 83.2. But I feel like the Ducks' penalty kill, and this is just from watching it, this isn't really diving into the numbers, but a lot of their penalty kill success, I feel like, relies on the exploits of John Gibson and Ryan Miller. While San Jose's penalty kill, on the other hand, they don't have the same quality goaltending in front of them, so it's a lot of the system that they deploy and the players that they have out there. So I feel like I'd give the edge to them on the penalty kill, and then as a whole in the category of special teams, I think San Jose comes out with more than a slight edge. I feel like they definitely have an edge, at least going into this series, on special teams.
Yeah, and like I said, we're on the same page on everything. You know, we feel the same way that, you know, San Jose does have a little bit more of an advantage on special teams play, at least, like you said, to start the series. But the big key, really, it's the last category, of course, Eddie, is goaltending. And if we want to talk about a category that the Ducks have more than a slight edge in, we're going to talk about Gibson, you know, being in net. And obviously the good news of him practicing, getting in these full practices, and most likely being ready to go for game one. I don't want to say it's a for sure thing, but we're pretty sure. But if you look at the way Gibson has played, outside of him staying healthy, I know that's a concern for some people, and obviously if he stays healthy for the series, we'll be fine. But you look at the numbers, you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. You look at him since the All-Star break, I mean, he's 14-4-2, goals against 1.95, save percentage 0.937. So outstanding numbers. Obviously, Miller's played well, too. He played really great down the stretch here in this final week as well. So, you know, I really give the edge to the Ducks here. I mean, you know, we talked about the Ducks not necessarily being consistent and sometimes taking too many penalties, and that's kind of the issue on special teams play. I feel like that's kind of the issue here for the Sharks. Their goaltending hasn't been as consistent this year. They've kind of had some issues. Don't get me wrong, Martin Jones is a great goalie, obviously, and he can turn it on. But you compare the two goalies and actually the two tandems, and I mean, you really have to give the edge to the Ducks. You know, not trying to be a homer, but just based upon what we've seen between the two teams and the play throughout the season, Eddie. You know, the Ducks could win this series, seriously, a couple games just because of John Gibson or Ryan Miller.
Yeah, I feel like this is the big advantage the Ducks have going into game one, especially if John Gibson is healthy. You've got that guy, that consistent threat that you've had all season, a guy who should be in consideration for the Vezina in the offseason awards this year. And really, Ryan Miller as well was one of the better backups around the league. So you've got that secondary option that, I mean, the Ducks had that. We thought they had that last year in Jonathan Bernier because of how well he'd played during the regular season. Of course, it didn't end that well for the Ducks when he ended up having to come in an important game and ended up blowing it for Anaheim. But yeah, I mean, I feel a lot better this year having Ryan Miller just in case John Gibson can't go. But the hope is that he's ready to go for game one, and then the Ducks will look to ride him all the way to a Stanley Cup final if he can get them there. And I feel like if anybody can, it's definitely John Gibson. On the other hand, like you had mentioned, I mean, Martin Jones and Aaron Dell have split the crease at times this year. The inconsistency has been there. You look at Aaron Dell's record, you wouldn't really think he's struggled. He's got a 15-5-4 record. But the individual numbers don't really back that up because he's got a lot of run support in the games that he's been in. And then Martin Jones has really been up and down all year. He's always been a streaky guy in net. But they definitely have some major question marks between the pipes. And I think that's why the Ducks get such a big edge in this category, is because we don't really know what Martin Jones or what Aaron Dell is going to show up. But we have an idea of what John Gibson is going to produce in round one, and it's going to be similar to what he's done all the way through the regular season.
Yep, and that's basically our breakdown of all the categories here. Eddie and I will break down one last thing at the very end. We're going to kind of talk about who's going to break out on this team, we think, in the playoffs, and who will be the maybe the X factor. We'll kind of cover both of that with one good fan question at the end. But before we do that, we have Ian and Eddie talk about this series. We kind of get more of a Sharks perspective, and Ian represents Teal Town USA. So here's the interview with both of them as they talk about the series more from a San Jose perspective.
All right, everybody. I've got Ian from the Teal Tinted Glasses podcast here to talk a little bit about the Sharks and Ducks series. How's the things going, Ian?
Going great. Thanks for having me on.
So, I mean, we'll get right into it here. It was a crazy end to the regular season, both for the Ducks and for the Sharks. Kind of the opposite thing. The Ducks ended up going in, win five games in a row. The Sharks came in losing five of their last six. Does that have you worried a little bit? Do you think it's kind of, some people say clean slate going into the playoffs, don't worry about what happened in the regular season, or do you take it a little bit more seriously, the fact that they struggled a bit going into the playoffs?
I think the thing that concerns me is the health, I think, of the Sharks going into this series. If the Sharks, especially with Evander Kane's been such a lightning rod for this team that when he was back out of the lineup again, with whatever undisclosed injury he had, or possibly still has, to be honest, they weren't as good. And then the last game, I mean, they didn't play very well even with him back in the lineup. So I think that's the concern, is not so much how they finish, just the health going into the series.
Yeah, and the Ducks are kind of in the same boat, right, with Cam Fowler being out and John Gibson being questionable for game one. I think the big thing, and it was a key factor we had talked about before, is the health of Joe Thornton and how mm-hmm. how big of a role he can play for this team when he's 100% healthy. The latest I've heard is he's doubtful for game one, but there's like a shadow of doubt over that statement, whether he could even be ready for the entire series. Do you think he returns at all for the series, and how important is his performance on the ice if he doesn't get back?
My concern with Joe Thornton coming back is, A, is he healthy enough to be back, and B, does everyone kind of be like, hey, Jumbo's back, now we can all just kind of relax a little bit? Because we've seen other teams have this in the playoffs where like a big gun comes back and everyone's kind of just like, yeah, we're good now. So I think that's my concern. I I honestly, I'd be surprised if Thornton's back this series. I don't expect him to be back. But if he is, you know, and he can play, then great. I mean, I'm never going to say no to having Joe Thornton on the ice, but I'm not counting. Like, I would rather be pleasantly surprised that he suits up than disappointed that he doesn't.
Yeah, I think we're, I mean, I think that's how a lot of Ducks fans feel right now with Cam Fowler. Is his prognosis is 2 to 6 weeks, but I feel it's a little bit loose on the 2 weeks. They've just kind of put that in there just hoping he'll be back for the playoffs, and it's more of a 4 to 6 week thing, and we probably don't see him to the second round if we're that lucky. But I think it'll be interesting because those are really two X factors that are out of the lineup for both the Ducks and the Sharks, in Joe Thornton and Cam Fowler and the impact they could bring. But if he does come back, and I've looked at the Sharks' lines a bit, but I haven't looked at them enough to know if it's consistent. But from what I've seen, it right now they run Evander Kane, Pavelski, and Donskoy in the first unit, and then Kucher, Hurdle, and Bodker on the second. Where does Joe Thornton fit if he comes back? Is he a third-line center, or does he bump Pavelski back to the wing? Or
yeah, I think if Thornton comes back, I'm assuming they'll bump Pavelski back to the wing and leave Evander Kane on that line and see what happens there. And then probably, you know, the third line doesn't change all that much. The second line probably gets Donskoy back, maybe pushes Bodker back down to the third line with Chris Tierney and probably Timo Meier.
Yeah, I mean, but their depth, and we'll move into the offense here to start things off. The depth that the Sharks have, not just in their top nine, but even some of the guys you see on the fourth line, and Yanni Hansen and Joel Ward, those are third line players on some good teams as well. Mm-hmm. I feel like now, we had given the edge in the podcast before this to the Sharks on offense, and I feel like that's a pretty fair statement. I mean, they've just got three consistent lines they can throw over the boards, and they've been pretty good all season. And then the Ducks have, of course, the top line with Raquel Perry and Raquel that's been good, but the Kessler line and the Adam Henrique line have been kind of shaky at times or non-existent. What do you think, who has the edge going into this series for offense, and how big of an edge do you think it is?
These games have been so tight. Like the games that they've played over the season, and even going into last year, they've been so tight that, well, I mean, on paper, I think that the Sharks have a clear edge on offense, but the way that these guys play each other, it just goes out the, you know, paper gets kind of goes out the window right away. On paper, I like the Sharks' chances, like in the offensive side, but the Ducks, you know, the Ducks have done really well on being able to match up to whatever the Sharks throw at them so far. I mean, the Sharks have had they won the season series, but at the same time, you know, they were all what, one goal games?
Yeah, it was 3-0-1 for the Sharks, and I believe the majority of them, I think there's one blowout the Sharks had, and the rest were one-goal games, and we've seen that for so long. I mean, it always seems to be like that, not just with the Ducks and Sharks. The Kings are usually involved in one-goal games between both teams as well, and they always seem to play each other tight. The real interesting thing for me with the Sharks lineup is all these guys they seem to have that don't play on a regular basis that can come in and make an impact. So I already mentioned Yannick Hansen, Joel Ward that occupy spots in that fourth line, but then you've got Joakim Ryan, you've got Barkley Goodrow, you've got Melker Karlsson, you've got all these guys that can fill in and play. I mean, Melker Karlsson played on the first line a couple games ago, I believe. So how important is it to have these guys who might not play on a nightly basis, but that can come in and make an impact?
Yeah, I feel I always joke that like the answer to every question that you could ask Peter DeBoer is always Melker Karlsson, because it seems like no matter what the problem is he puts Melker Karlsson there to try and fix it. But yeah, I mean, you know, the depth is a great thing that the Sharks have had, and it's been bolstered by just, you know, young players that have stepped up, your Kevin LeBanks, your Timo Meiers, that have really, you know, pushed their way into the lineup and held it down too, which has really been great to see. So yeah, I mean, it's a nice problem to have when you got a Yannick Hansen sitting up in the press box that can draw in at any time.
Yeah, and you know, of course we've got the big names, Pavelski, Couture, Evander Kane, but who's a guy that you think is going to be, I guess, an unsung hero of this offense if the Sharks should move on? A guy that you maybe wouldn't expect to be a big contributor on a nightly basis, but a guy who could really impress?
Oof. That's hard. I really like what I've seen from Timo Meier this year. I think he's a guy that, you know, can slot into anywhere in the basically your top nine and be productive. And I think a name that you didn't mention that is another one to watch would be Tomas Hertl, who could come up and, you know, he can have a he can be quiet sometimes, but generally speaking, like on the score sheet, he's quiet, but he's always, you know, factoring into the play. So
yeah.
Thomas Hurdle could be a big, big impact for the Sharks this playoff.
The thing that always comes to mind for me with Thomas Hurdle is the four-goal game with the between-the-legs goal for me. That's that's always the thing I remember him for because, I mean, that was just insane the night he had. But I agree with that. The guy we had for the Ducks was Andre Cashin. I feel like, I mean, they're two similar types of players that on a night where they're feeling it, they can really make a difference to their team's offense. But I touched on this already, but the slumping going in, the losing five mm-hmm. in the last six, do you think it's a worry? Because they had rattled off eight straight wins before that. Is it just slumping at the wrong time? And it's just, you know, every team goes through this at some point. And for the Sharks, unfortunately, it was right at the end of the season.
Right at the end, yeah.
Which is never the best time to do it. But no. You got to think before that. I mean, eight games in a row, I mean, that's not a fluke. And they were able to pull that off. They were playing some great hockey. And they were one of the top scoring teams in the league. Do you think they get back to that in the playoffs? I mean, it's pretty realistic to say so.
Yeah, again, it comes down to health, because I think if you look at when the Sharks really started to slump, they, you know, the health issues really started creeping up again. You had guys that, you know, Evander Kane was sitting out. Eric Fair, who has been coming, you know, came from playing for the Gulls, if I remember correctly,
yeah.
You know, comes in and actually really solidified that fourth line, really held that fourth line together. And then, you know, he goes out with injury, and then Evander Kane goes out with injury, and it was really after the trade deadline that the Sharks really started rattling off those wins, and then to lose those two, you know, trade deadline acquisitions, I think that's when things really started to fall apart. So it's not the slumping I'm so worried about. It's the health, because yeah. I think that they're cause and effect there.
With Evander Kane, because that trade was so interesting at the time. I feel like still it was kind of a steal in what they're able to give up for him, especially even if he resigns, it turns into a first round pick. Do you think, I mean, he seems to be happy there, and he's really liking his opportunity there over Buffalo. Do you think he re-signs, and if he does, do you think the trade is still a steal as it was considered at the time?
Yeah, absolutely. If I would be really, really, really disappointed if Evander Kane finds greener pastures come free agency. I'm not going to lie. That'd be devastating because of the impact that he's had coming in. I remember when the trade happened, I thought, well, you know, they covered all their bases pretty good. So if he doesn't stay, like, it's not the end of the world. But now with the way he's played, I can't imagine this team without him again.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, we did a whole trade deadline show that day live, and there was all the news about the Ducks being involved in Pacioretty and Evander Kane. And then, of course, the Sharks get Evander Kane, and the big deal of the day for us was Jason Chimera out of the Islanders. So it was a bit disappointing, but, I mean, he's been great there. And he's had a couple unbelievable games and really just an unbelievable time with the Sharks. So I'd be surprised if he didn't, because this team is still going to be one that competes next year. And he'd be a huge part on that, because he right now he's the go-to guy to score goals on this team. And, I mean, you've got guys like Pavelski and Kucherov as well who are definitely going to be relied upon. But it's nice to have that extra guy in the lineup, because they really haven't had that. I could be wrong here, but the last time I remember they're having that type of player is Danny Heatley when he was in with the team, that type of elite goal scorer.
Yeah, I mean, that might be that, and that could be fair. I mean, if you look at, you know, you look at what the Sharks did this offseason, you know, Patrick Marleau leaves as a, you know, as an unrestricted free agent. I mean, that was a huge void to fill. And, you know, I give the Sharks, the kids a lot of credit for how they covered for that. But Evander Kane was such a lightning rod for this team, because I feel like, you know, if you look at how the team was playing before the trade deadline, it was kind of similar. You know, they kind of got their hit and miss, and, you know, it's like, well, this team should be a playoff team, but I wouldn't be shocked if they missed. And then Evander Kane came, and they were like, okay, yeah, everything's great now. But yeah, no, it's definitely an element, especially with Joe Thornton being out. I mean, he basically took a team that we were expecting. I think a lot of us were kind of feeling like before the trade deadline, like this was a team that was just going to be happy to be there. Yeah. And now it's a team, you know, we feel like even without Joe Thornton, like this is a team that can do some damage.
Yeah, and it really does look like, I mean, they've played excellent hockey all year, and I think a lot of people are sleeping on them a bit just because of the last six games here where they lost home ice advantage. I think if they win two or three of those games, they get home ice and they're sitting pretty comfortable, and I feel like a lot of people aren't sleeping on them. But I want to shift gears here and look at defense because I feel like this is – if you had to pick something that's really, really close and if it's hard to pick an edge here, I feel like it's defense. Of course, the Ducks line up with Lindholm, Manson. With Fowler out, it's Beauchemin, Montour. And the bottom pairings, what scares me the most, is Pettersson and Malinsky. And then you've got the Sharks, who last time I checked had Paul Martin with Brent Burns, Vlasic with Braun, and Dylan with Dylan DeMello. I want to know what you think. I know I believe before we give the edge a bit to San Jose in offense, what do you think, how these teams match up on defense?
I mean, defensively, it's going to be an interesting series. Man, the Ducks defense always amazes me where they find these guys. I mean, you got to love a defense that can get rid of Sammy Vatanen and, you know, get rid of a top prospect like Theodore and still be fine before injury. I mean, that's a testament to some pretty enviable depth right there. I it's going to be interesting because I love our top pair of Vlasic and Braun. I think that they can go toe to toe with anyone, and they have gone toe to toe with the best lines in the league. The Brent Burns line pair scares me a little bit because Brent Burns is, you know, he started the season off slow offensively, so his defensive issues were obviously under the microscope. That goes away a little bit when you can get some offense out of him. I really preferred the combination of Joakim Ryan with Brent Burns, though, over Paul Martin. The going back to Paul Martin when Ryan got injured didn't surprise me, but I don't know if I like Paul Martin out there against the Ducks team, and I hope that Peter DeBoer isn't, you know, completely married to that pairing, and if it goes, you know, if things start going south, that Joakim Ryan gets an opportunity to come in and, you know, see if he can get back up to speed. That pairing is interesting. And then the Brendan Dillon, Dylan DeMello pair. Dylan DeMello gets a lot of crap from Sharks fans, which probably isn't fair because we have another guy, Tim Heed, who is actually a former Ducks draft pick.
Yeah.
And, you know, guys really like him. He's an easy guy to like, you know, booming slap shot from the point, you know, fun offensive player, but not exactly steady in his own end.
Yeah.
And so Dylan DeMello, you know, who's kind of plays a quiet game, you know, not always the best game. Like, he's a bottom pair defenseman, and that's where he should be. But that pairing can sometimes be an adventure, and sometimes it can be great. So it's really, really going to be interesting to see how they handle against the Ducks.
Yeah, I think it's so close because you've got the star power, of course, in Brent Burns. And that's the big name that catches a lot of attention. And it was very interesting to see him paired with Paul Martin because I don't think – he hasn't been up all year, right? He's been within Paul the Martin. AHL for a bit.
Yeah, Paul Martin, you know, he got injured. He got injured. He came back a little early, had to get surgery again. When he came back, he had trouble getting back to speed, so they had him. They waived him. And then they sent him to the Barracuda, and then he just kind of got back into the lineup once Joakim Ryan went down with a little injury and hasn't left now. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes going forward.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you break it down, you look at the top pairing. If Vlasic and Braun are the top pairing for the Sharks, and then you've got Lindholm and Manson, I feel like it's fairly close. And the Ducks have relied a lot on Lindholm and Manson, and they've been their best pairing all season. The second pairing is where it gets interesting for me because I feel like if you have Fowler in there with Montour, it's definitely a huge advantage. But right now we've got retiree Francois Beauchemin playing with Brandon Montour, which is just as scary as playing Paul Martin with Brent Burns when you have a guy that you don't really rely on a lot and you have a guy who has a lot of promise on the other side, and it's scaring a lot of people. I think the edge in the end goes to San Jose with that bottom pairing because you've got the consistency and at least the reliability of two guys who've been around the game for a decent amount of time and know what they're doing. And right now it looks like the Ducks are going to go into the first round with either Pettersson and Malinsky, which are two guys who made their debuts this year, or you've got Pettersson and Kevin Bieksa, who's coming back from hand surgery, which isn't that much better. So it's a bit scary, but I want to hear what you think with who you'd give the edge to, but I think you kind of got to give a slight edge to San Jose with Fowler not in the lineup.
Yeah, if Fowler comes back in, I think it's advantage. It's probably advantage Ducks if Fowler comes back in. without Fowler in, it's close. I guess I'd give the slight edge to the Sharks, but man, it's close.
Yeah, it is, and it's just, for me, it's just the inexperience on that bottom pairing that frightens me a bit, because in Anaheim, you can shelter it a bit. You can get them out there in a favorable matchup, but once you go to San Jose, you know Peter DeBoer is going to be trying to get Pavelski and Kucher out there against that that bottom pairing, and they're gonna get away from the favorable minutes for a bit. Let's go to special teams here, because this one, again, I think I don't think it's really close, and the Ducks have struggled a lot on the power play all season. So when you look at where they finished in the regular season, San Jose finished 16th at 20.6%. Ducks finished 23rd at 17.8%. I mean, the Ducks power play has been a journey all season. It's been a mess, and you wouldn't really think of it if you looked on it with the outside looking in and looking at the guys they have on their first unit in Getzlaf, Perry, Raquel,
right,
Montour, Fowler, but it's really been a mess all year. And then the Sharks, surprising to me that they only sat at 16th, because this is a team in the past who've been deadly on the power play. And I'm not sure if it's because of Joe Thornton going down in January, or if it's just a mix of different things. But what's going on with their power play? Has it looked better as of late, or is it a little bit worrying?
No, the power play is one of the biggest points of concern that I think any Sharks fan should have going into this series since Joe Thornton's come down. It's funny, because with Joe Thornton in the lineup, you know, a lot of people complain that the top power play unit is too predictable, but yeah, the power play significantly dropped off without Joe Thornton in the lineup, and it never really found its pacing. I think it was successful for I don't know the numbers, but it was the amount of success to power plays for over the last stretch of the season was atrocious. It was absolutely atrocious.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, that's his bread and butter right there on the power play. I think you got to give the edge to San Jose on the power play just based off the numbers and the guys they have in the lineup right now. The Ducks just haven't been able to figure it out for whatever reason. The one that's interesting to me is the penalty kill, because both teams sport good penalty kills. San Jose's the second best. Anaheim's the fifth best. Now, I've been critical of the Ducks penalty kill all season because I feel like a lot of the credit has to go to John Gibson and Ryan Miller, because their save percentage on the penalty kill has just been unbelievable. They've kept the Ducks in it a lot. And on the flip side with the Sharks, the goaltending hasn't necessarily been consistent all season with Martin Jones and Aaron Dell, and I feel like their penalty kill is a little bit more system side. I think that's a lot has to do with credit to the players they put on the ice and not so much relying on goaltending on most occasions.
Yeah, I think that I think that'd be a pretty fair assessment, to be completely honest. But I mean, penalty kill is not like if you look at the things that the Sharks have to worry about going into the playoff series, I wouldn't count the penalty kill among them. I think the penalty kill's been pretty solid, and I think it goes back to the system more than the goalie. Although Martin Jones has been great the last couple of months, where Aaron Dell kind of had a little hot start and then kind of dropped off. But, I mean, those goaltenders on the other side, though. Like, John Gibson, I like. Actually, it's funny, because I got called out on the show for saying something about John Gibson, and then I had to look at the numbers, and I'm like, man, I'm so wrong on this. It's just because, like, it's funny, you know, you see, like, such... It's hard because, like, normally we have our teams, like, you know, they have a couple of games before the season ends, whereas I think we were done with each other in, like, December or something silly, so I hadn't seen. I think it was like, oh, I saw the blowout game, and I'm like, yeah, well, you know, and you don't really kind of see the teams play each other down the stretch, so you don't see as much, and I had to be corrected by my co-host Kevin Lacey, and I mean, John Gibson's been fantastic, and I'll happily eat crow on that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good segue right into the next topic here, is goaltenders. And, on most occasions, I think this has been sort of a down year for Martin Jones until as of late. It's been a real struggle because he's really fought to share the net with Aaron Dell at times. I mean, Aaron Dell's record is extremely good, but his numbers don't really support that a bit because he's had a couple bad games lately. But, I mean, you look at the December 27th is the number that sticks out in a lot of Ducks fans' minds, because that's when we finally got everybody back healthy. It was when Ryan Kesler came back. Getzlaf had been back for a couple games prior. The Ducks' save percentage since then, I believe this is 5-on-5, is 93.5. San Jose's is 91.25. I feel like if John Gibson is ready to go, which is still questionable for game one, I think the edge has to go to Anaheim just because of how good he's been. I mean, we've talked about before on our show that he has to be in consideration for the Vezina. Maybe not to win it, but he should at least get a couple votes here and there. But Martin Jones on any given night can be an outstanding goaltender, and all he has to do is get hot in the playoffs. And this isn't as much of a gap as it is right now going into it.
Yeah, I think the goaltending matchup is going to be pretty close. In the playoffs, even last year when we got outed to the, we got killed by the Oilers. But I mean, if you look again how banged up the team was, Martin Jones, I thought was great in the playoffs last year, and he was, he was, in my opinion, the MVP the year before when we lost to the Penguins. Martin Jones kind of he's a streaky goalie, and I think a lot of NHL goalies are. And he had some troubles midseason, but I feel like that's the way he's kind of been since he's come here. He goes, he's hot and cold, and he always kind of has this midseason slump in the middle. As long as that slump doesn't return in the playoffs, I mean, I like the goaltending matchup. Even with a healthy Gibson, I still Martin Jones has never really given me reason to doubt in the playoffs.
Yeah, and like you said, all it takes in the playoffs is to get a guy go hot in the playoffs, and then you can make a good run. I mean, pretty much any goalie who gets in the playoffs has that ability to just play well for a 16-game span or 24-game span or whatever it is to get all the way there. They have that ability, and I think, of course, it's beneficial to have John Gibson in for the Ducks, and that's really the big talking point right now, because we all know Fowler and his timetable, but Gibson's been listed as day-to-day after getting hit by Landeskog. It's got a lot of us worrying because he skated today, but if he's not ready to go, and you look at Ryan Miller going in, and yes, he's been great, but it's a tough situation to throw a guy in, even a guy with the resume that he has. But
right,
I'm definitely more comfortable going in with Gibson and Jones than I am with Miller against Jones. It would just be, I think it would just be too worrying.
Yeah, obviously you don't sign a backup to.
Yeah.
To with the ambition of him playing, starting minutes in the playoffs. I think that, I agree, Ryan Miller, he has a great resume, but if it's Ryan Miller game one, as a Sharks fan, I'm kind of licking my chops, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, that's definitely favorable for sure. The last couple things I want to look at here, and they're in a bit, but... what's an X factor, you think, for the Sharks if they're going to win this series? And I know it's like I said, it's kind of arbitrary, it's kind of vague, but what do you think is one thing that would be an X factor for the Sharks if they're going to pull out this win?
It's got to be a healthy Evander Kane. I mean, everything seems to, just kind of live and died with Evander Kane lately. So a healthy Evander Kane to me is the one, that's what's going to get us through this series. That's what's going to, that's what's going to get us as far as we get in the playoffs, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, what we had listed for the Ducks earlier in the show today was that they just have to have that depth scoring consistently, because you're going to come up with a team that can put out Pavelski. That Pavelski line is going to be good with Evander Kane. You've got Logan Couture on that line, and he's been good all season. And then that third line, scares me more than anything, I think, is Chris Tierney, Kevin LeBanc, and Timo Meier has a lot of promise to be a line that can match up very well against other teams' third lines or possibly the fourth line. So I feel like for the Ducks, they got to get Silfverberg, Kessler, Cogliano going, and Henry, Kasha, and Richie have to get going, or it's going to be tough, because the Sharks are just going to consistently be winning matchups if they're not getting things going.
It's it's going to be interesting, though, because I think another X factor is probably going to be the faceoff dot, because I feel like that's one place where I think the Ducks are generally pretty good in the dot, whereas the Sharks, if you have guys like Couture is the center of that line, but Hurdle takes a lot of those draws.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see how the faceoff battle goes down between the two teams.
Yeah, because I feel like at least for the first two home games, it's probably going to be Kessler's line against Pavelski's line. And I feel like Pavelski can handle himself in the faceoff dot against Ryan Kessler. The big matchup, I think, is where it's probably Ryan Getzlaff against Logan Couture. And if Thomas Hertl is taking those draws, I mean, Ryan Getzlaff isn't an ace when in the faceoff dot, but I feel like there's definitely an advantage there for him over Thomas Hertl, and it all depends. I mean, that to me is the interesting matchup on who's going to win that, because the Kessler-Pavelski is going to be a war. But
yeah.
I think the winner to come out of the Getzlaff-Couture matchup is going to be important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The last thing here, and I mean, we kind of touched on this because you had talked about how a guy that you think is going to, maybe not a big name guy, is going to be Timo Meier, but who's an unsung hero you could see coming out and being a big name in the series? Not just up front, but just anybody.
Oh, man. Like it's hard because like everyone's been so. I mean, you know, I think a name you brought up earlier was Chris Tierney. You know, I think Chris Tierney is another guy that could, you know, be. You know, I think he's sung definitely in Shark circles, but I think as far as maybe people from the outside looking in, I think Chris Tierney might turn a lot of heads this series.
Yeah, and the guy we had picked, and it's no surprise to anybody listening to this right now from the Ducks side, but it's Andre Kasha. Just the way he's played down the stretch. He had the big OT winner against the Avalanche. He had the game winner against Minnesota, which obviously ended up clinching a playoff spot for the Ducks. He's been an unbelievable surprise for Anaheim this year. 20 goal scorer, former 7th-round pick. He's been a guy that I don't think anybody expected to do this well, and he's fit well on that third line, and he's going to be a guy they're going to need to continue to play well because he could be a guy that could come out of nowhere and get a couple big goals here and there and win some games.
Definitely, yeah. That's definitely be a good name. I think if I was trying to pick a name from just outside looking in, that'd probably be a name that I'd pick as well.
Well, we got to get to it because you know it's going to come up, but what do you think this series goes? Who's the eventual winner? And I know it's tough because right now you're on a Ducks podcast, so it's tough.
Yeah, I know.
I think it's going to be close, but what do you think it's going to finish out as?
I think I have on my bracket, I think I have Sharks in 6, but yeah. I wouldn't be... you know, I've been really confident when this team's healthy and it plays well. I think, you know, if they're healthy, then I think that they can, you know, I think they're set up good against the Ducks. I think they would have been set up good against the Kings as well. Yeah. Should that have been the playoff matchup for the upteenth billionth time. So I kind of, you know, I know that for some listeners, I'm sure like, oh, of course the Sharks guy thinks the Sharks are going to win, but I just feel like that the Sharks have enough there that they should be able to get past the Ducks. But I think it's gonna be a war.
Yeah.
These games always are a war. Like, it's kind of nice that we're playing the Ducks because I mean I think that it's kind of, you know, the Duck Sharks. Like, we've had some wars in the regular season, but we haven't really had that playoff matchup of late.
Yeah.
And I think people are gonna remember just how great this rivalry is. Along with, you know, anytime that the California teams get together, it's always a war. So I'm kind of excited to see how this, you know, how this plays out because it's going to be war. It's going to be probably one of the best series to watch, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been since, what, 2009 that the last time...
We don't talk about that series. Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the last time we really got the rivalry reignited and brought to light. Everybody talks about Ducks-Kings and on our side and how that's one of the better rivalries in the National Hockey League. But the Sharks and Ducks, every time they play during the regular season, like you said, it gets a lot... Like, it's a very close game, and that's always good talks about, but they're feisty games on occasion as well, and it's a very, very good rivalry that doesn't get a lot of light. So I'm excited to see how this series goes. Now, I get where you're coming from. I mean, it's going to be a close series. I feel like it's a 6-7 game, and we all have our biases. I mean, it's hard for me to not pick the Ducks because I'm a Ducks fan. It's very, very difficult. I mean, I said Ducks in 7s, but I could see it going either way. I mean, It's going to be a 6 or 7 game series no matter what, unless either injuries or just something, somebody blows a tire or something and it just goes out the window. But I wouldn't be surprised if either team wins this in 6 or 7, and it's just going to be a war. And something, it's one of these things we've talked about, whether it be the X factor, the special teams, the goaltending, something is going to be above and beyond and win the series for this team. It's just going to be that one thing that a team can get a slight edge on, I feel like, that's going to push them over the top.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you know, these it's I'm just excited to watch it, to be completely honest, because I feel like it's kind of like, you know, like we said, it's kind of a forgotten rivalry. I think both our teams have some history with the Kings, but there's some good history between the Sharks and Ducks as well.
Last thing I want to close out in here before we finish this up is looking ahead to the second round. No matter who makes it out of this first round, who would you rather see between Vegas and LA in the second round?
Oh man, that's tough. I feel like, I mean, I think I'd rather see LA just because I think that LA is a little, you know, they play more of a game that I think the Sharks can exploit.
Yeah.
But no matter who comes out of that series, man, no one's getting out of any of these two series alive. Like, yeah. whoever comes out of, like, it's such a, these games are such a battle. I think, you know, with Vegas being in such close proximity to LA too, I think it's, you know, there's going to be other games where it's just going to be a war, and whoever gets out of that series is going to be, you know, worse for wear.
Yeah, my thinking behind it is a lot of people are kind of sleeping on Vegas again going into this first round like they did at the beginning of the regular season. Sure. And I think like most of us did, even at the 25-game mark when they were playing so well, we were waiting for them to slump off. If they make it to the second round, I feel like, again, they've proved people wrong that they're for real. I don't want to face them in a second round because they've proven themselves then, right? So
yeah. No, I'd rather face the Kings because yeah. I think that the Sharks could match up better with the Kings. I don't want none of this Vegas nonsense, man. No. I don't want none of it.
I don't want to go into T-Mobile Arena either. I mean, that place is the one that always comes to mind of such a great atmosphere is when the Ducks played the Jets. I think it was 2 years ago, and it was just a whiteout. It was the craziest thing I've seen in a long time, and I feel like T-Mobile Arena is just going to be nuts. It's been almost impossible to win there all year. I think the Ducks have won there once this year, and I couldn't believe it. But I don't want to play there because, I mean, you got four games there potentially, and I feel like Vegas could easily win all of them.
Yeah, yeah, no, I completely agree. Like I am done. I am done betting against the Knights. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think most of us are. But thanks a lot, Ian, for coming on the show. I think it's great to get the second side of the opinion. I mean, we always like doing this during the playoffs because it's a lot of Ducks talk, but I feel like a lot of people appreciate getting that the other side, so it's not too much of a homer podcast.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you want to, it's good. It's good to talk both sides. I mean, this has been really fun. I'm glad you had me on.
All right, perfect. If you guys want, go check out Ian on Twitter, and also check out the Teal Tinted Glasses podcast. That we were having a mouthful with that on the earlier show. It takes a little bit of warming up to, but we got it out here. But again, thank you for coming on, and hopefully appreciate we can have you on again sometime. And even if it doesn't turn out well for the Ducks,
hey, either vice versa, I'm game.
And that was Ian. We want to thank him for coming on and talking with Eddie as they broke down the series, obviously giving more of a Sharks opinion there, so you guys can kind of get a feel. And it's not just Eddie talking about how we feel about this series. But anyways, the last part we want to do real, real quick. We have a real good fan question from Khalid. He asks, you know, who do we think is going to break out this postseason? It's also kind of an X factor thing that Eddie and I had talked about, you know, what could be the game changer and, you know, tilt the scales basically in the favor of the Ducks or maybe the Sharks too. So what do you think, Eddie, who do you think will break out for the Ducks and or what X factor do you think, you know, can shift this series one way or another?
For me, I think for a guy who could break out, it would be Jakob Silfverberg. I mean, the easy pick here is probably Andre Kasha, but I think Silfverberg has looked very, very good in his last five games. He's got 6 points in his last five heading into the playoffs, and I just feel like he's a guy that's primed to get really just have a good playoffs, and he's going to need to because if he does, he could be the catalyst to get things going for the shutdown line. That's going to be very important because he's the offensive threat on that line, right? So he's going to be the guy that's looked to really be the spark to get that line going, and I feel like if he can get going early on, he's going to be a guy that can really be important for the Ducks in this postseason. I mean, he's a streaky guy. I mean, we talked about Martin Jones being a streaky guy in net. Jakob Silfverberg's a streaky guy up front. So I'm hoping that what he's done in the final five games here can translate into some success, at least in this first round.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the obvious choice would be Kase. I mean, obviously, you know, we talked about him and stuff that he's been doing lately. For me, the one that I'm going to throw out there, and it's probably one that a lot of people have talked about, is Corey Perry. You know, you look at the Ducks' top line, you look at the assists that Getzlaf has piled up, even though he's only, you know, really played like about two-thirds of the season. You look at the goals that Raquel's piled up. You look at how those two have played together. It's been great. And then, of course, you have Perry, which – depends on who you talk to. I mean, some, you know, you love him, hate him. You know, he had 17 goals this season. He did have a lot more assists, you know, 32. But I know a lot of people were disappointed in the goal production. They wanted to see somewhere between, you know, 25 and 35, somewhere in that kind of number. So to me, he's one to look for. I mean, if the Ducks are going to get going, and get a long streak. I think the second and third lines do have to pick it up, as you and I have talked about throughout the show, Eddie. But I also like to see Corey Perry get it going. You know, he had a great postseason a couple years ago, but some of the other postseasons he has not had, you know, the scoring that we'd like to see. So to me, if he gets going on that top line, then I would say watch out. I see the Ducks going pretty far this postseason.
Yeah, he was a big part of – Corey Perry was a big part of the Ducks' postseason success last year. He had a big goal, obviously, against Edmonton to win it in overtime. I think it was double overtime that he ended up winning, getting the pass from Ryan Getzlaff. He had a big game in the series against the Flames. So he's just been a big part. I mean, postseason hockey is what Corey Perry lives for, and he really always ups his game to get on that level in the playoffs to really just up his game and be the guy that we're used to seeing from him. I mean, he gets a lot of flack for the production that he has during the regular season, and a lot of that is due to the contract. I mean, he's still at 49 points this year, which isn't anything to sludge about, but it's the fact that he's making $8.5 million, and you look at Ryan Getzlaff, who has an identical contract and has put up 61 points in 56 games, and we all just want the 30, 40, 50 goal scorer, Corey Perry, to come back and not have to worry about it. But, you know, I feel like he always ups his game for playoffs, and we've seen it in the past, and I feel like we're going to see it in this series here, especially against the Sharks. I mean, we hear all the time about the Kings and the Ducks and the rivalry that they have. And the last time we saw the Sharks in the playoffs was in 2009, and I feel like this is a huge part. I mean, me and Ian talked about this, but I think it's a huge game and a huge series to really reignite this rivalry in people's minds. I mean, we don't really talk about it enough, but all the games that San Jose and Anaheim play are always close games. They can get feisty at times, and I'm really excited to see how this series pans out, because I think it's good to get this rivalry back in people's minds.
I agree. The rivalry between the Ducks and the Sharks is pretty strong too, and you know, we're going to wrap this up. The best thing is, you know, series out, they stay healthy and win this. But we'll give our predictions right now, Eddie, after discussing everything and going over it with the Sharks. Ian there on their perspective, what do you think as far as the Ducks in this series? How many games, who wins, and whatnot?
Yeah, I still think it's going to be the Ducks in seven. And I feel like goaltending sways the tide of this series for Anaheim. If John Gibson can stay healthy for the entire seven-game series, I just feel like he's going to be able to will them through those games. And you know, I still give San Jose some credit, because I think they have what it takes to win this series. I just feel like, you know, the edge that the Ducks have in goaltending is going to be a huge factor to them. And really, in the playoffs, the main thing you need to go a long way is to have your goaltender get hot. It's almost impossible to make it all the way and win it if your goaltender's not playing at the top of his game, and I feel like that's the huge edge for the Ducks in this one. But, you know, if we look at this and look back at the end of the series, and either the Sharks or the Ducks win this in six or seven, I'm not going to be surprised. I mean, it's a very, very close matchup. Like we said, we struggled to really pick a significant edge in some of these categories, so it's going to be a fun one to watch, but I have to go with Anaheim in seven.
And I'm going to up you one ante on that. I'm going with the Ducks in six. I think that they get it done in six. I really do. I think if they come out and they win these first two games, Thursday and Saturday at home, and put the pressure on the Sharks, I think that they can get it done in six. Just like you said, Gibson's going to be the huge part of this. If he's healthy and he does what he's been doing, I see the Ducks, you know, pulling it off. The only concern for me is really the special teams play. I mean, if the Ducks get in penalty trouble in some of these games, then we may see the Sharks blow the Ducks out in one or two of these games, you know, if that happens. I mean, it only happened once in the regular season, but the Ducks can't lose their cool. They got to work on the forecheck, and they can play a physical game, but they, you know, they can't get too crazy. So that's what I'm looking for here in this series, and I think if they do that, I think they pull it off. With that, we have a couple of quick announcements that we want to do. Eddie, I know you wanted to talk about Cool Hockey and the cool partnership that we have with them.
Yeah, it's pretty cool that we've been able to set up with them, and most of you have probably seen it on Twitter so far, but we got a couple of things that we've set up with them. So the first one is we have a discount code that's set up. It's DNP20. If you use that discount code, on checkout with Cool Hockey. You get 20% off your order, which equates to about $40, $45 off a jersey if you're getting it, which is pretty good. And a lot of times they have different promos where they offer free shipping and whatnot. So, I mean, you can end up saving a lot of money using the discount code and coupling that with some of the promotions that they offer on their website. So it's really cool that they've been able to do that for us, and that's always running. So anytime you want to use that, it's not only at specific times. You can use the discount code at any time you want to purchase a jersey from Cool Hockey, and you'll get the 20% discount. The other couple things that we've been doing is they've given us a jersey that we are giving away as well. We're giving that away currently on the postgame show's Forever Mighty 3-star leaderboard. So if you haven't checked that out yet, all you have to do is check out the Forever Mighty Twitter, before the game. We make predictions, three predictions of what's going to happen. It's always going to be who scores the Ducks' first goal, what's the final score of the game, and then we have a third random one each time, and every correct answer you get gets points on the leaderboard. We'll be doing that as long as the Ducks are in the playoffs. After their last game in the playoffs, that will end the leaderboard for April, and the person leading at that time will end up winning a jersey. So, I mean, you don't have to do too much to enter and win the jersey, so it's pretty fun there. And then stay tuned, because this is going to probably be coming out tonight. We're recording this on April 10th, so stay tuned tomorrow for the giveaway for the gift card. We have a $50 gift card that they've given us to give away as well. We'll have a couple different ways you can enter that through Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So if you're listening to this before Wednesday, before the playoffs start, then stay tuned for that, and we'll have that out tomorrow.
Yeah, and if you're, you know, if you don't feel like you're getting enough free stuff, we've also done a bracket challenge again for, you know, the longstanding fans. As you know, we've done it for a couple seasons now. So bracketchallenge.nhl.com/leagues/ducks and pucks, or just Google NHL bracket challenge, look up the league. Obviously it's Ducks and Pucks, and the top three people on there will be giving away prizes. We don't know exactly what yet, but don't worry, we're gonna give away stuff. So you've got that, you've got the Cool Hockey stuff on our post game show, the regular podcast show, you know, we've got the watch party coming up for game four. We're gonna give away free stuff to those in attendance there, so we're pumped up. We're doing a lot of stuff here for the Ducks, postseason run. Eddie and I are excited. We're going to have another show most likely after game three. We're going to try and kind of keep the weekly show maybe a little bit closer together. I know some of you wanted maybe two shows in a week, so we're going to try and do that for the playoffs. Obviously, we can't control what happens, you know, if someone wins in four games like the Ducks. No, just kidding. We don't think that's going to happen. But if something happens where the series gets shortened, it may affect our schedule, obviously. But we're going to try and at least get, you know, a couple more shows regularly. So hope you enjoyed this show. We went through a lot of stuff. So let's go Ducks and knock out the Sharks in round one.